football on Off the Ball.
If it's Casemiro or no one, and you think it should be no one, then I'm afraid we understand football and life in extremely different ways. Doesn't mean I'm right.
How is it Casemiro or no one?
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
It is The Hurling Pod, with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. This time round, we've had a bit of a rebrand. We're the three fucking nobodies, according to a Tipperary supporter from last week. This is the joy of when the lads come out with a nice nuanced conversation. I wonder what's going to happen in the Munster Championship. Brought up by James Skell in the middle of a question that was entirely unrelated. Murph, I'll throw the ball to you and you tell us who isn't coming out of the Munster Championship. And then the lads decide, you know what, might be tricky for Tipperary. We're not ruling them out entirely. But Cork might just finish ahead of them. And even with the caveat where you're like, ooh, I think Waterford are the only team we think that aren't going to come out, and it's going to be a tough battle, and the first two rounds are really important. What gets clipped? Not just the bit where the lads say Tipperary aren't going to get out, and it's a pity they won't be around for the championship this summer. And then some Tipperary supporters took it quite badly. James Skell, if you want to defend yourself here, one guy on TikTok, this even on the Off the Ball TikTok, was like, he was never even a fucking hurler, was said about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, don't mind him. I'm worried about Murph. In fairness, I had kind of planned to throw him off because he's dry. Mark, you're very clean. You're very disciplined, right? You're very nicely measured. So I said, oh, I need a curveball or two. So I just know you're 7 days planned now. So I'm expecting something to come at me today. So I'm ready.
To be fair, I actually quite enjoyed it. If I was angry, I might have something for you. But I think I was in work or something one of the days and was having a break or something. I had a little look at the phone. And I was like, 20 notifications. Like what? On Twitter, I was like, I haven't put anything up. This is a bit unusual. Next thing I see, Off the Ball have tagged us in, you know, Tip aren't going to make the Outer Munster. I was like, okay, we said that in essence. But I believe also we said a grain of sand will tip the scales here. Like, so wasn't really a fair reflection of it.
And
next comment I open is like three fucking nobodies. So I was like, all right, there's lads gone here. There's lads absolutely gone mad. So I actually really enjoyed it, to be honest. I have to say that's a morbid kind of enjoyment I had, but yeah, great week.
Yeah, I think some of those Tipperary supporters who were having a go have possibly kind of snuck under the rock a little bit after what happened between Clare and Tip in the semi-finals this
weekend.
Well,
Paddy, someone needs to check in on Paddy, whoever Paddy is, because Paddy lost a head altogether. Paddy, yeah. That was the three fucking nobody's comment.
I think Paddy now needs a small bit of... You know, he's
Paddy needs to calm it. Calm it on the small bit, Paddy. Whoever you are...
Do you remember that figure? What was it called? Bad Boys, your man goes woosah. Yeah, start pointing your earlobes. Paddy, start pointing your earlobes and start saying woosah. Okay, calm it down, son.
I have a feeling Paddy is probably spinning already and going, you know, actually, 5 weeks off to get ready for Limerick. This is a genius move by Tipperary to not qualify for the league final. But it was a hell of a weekend and it's left us with lots of talk about, because there was part of us going, you know what, I kind of agree with some of the players who did the interviews last week that the semi-finals feel unnecessary, particularly as we move into the new Division 1 era from next year. It just feels like play a league final between the top two teams and let that be the end of the campaign and leave there be a little bit of extra time to get ready for championship. And then, you know, we weren't expecting this. We were talking last week about there's a very good chance this is going to be Limerick against Clare in the league final, and it's the Cats against Clare again. But it's the first league final between them since 2005, so there's a fresh feel about it. And this is a Kilkenny team, Murph, who have now inflicted the only two knockout defeats on Limerick since 2019. So in 5 years, they've lost two games. Limerick will turn around the course and say they've won the important ones when it came to All-Ireland finals. But maybe there's a little something about Kilkenny that can get at this Limerick team.
Yeah, maybe there is. Of course, I'd like to think there is. But yeah, looking at the game of the weekend, like, you definitely have to say the first thing is that Limerick's heads seem to be kind of a little bit somewhere else. Like, they started brilliant, you know, 1-2 straight out of the traps. And I was thinking, right, this could be a tough day now. But then, like, the first, I suppose, marker of maybe something being off or maybe Kilkenny being really at the game was Kilkenny rattled off, was it about 2-3 without response, which is just, that's not Limerick, you know, where we'd often talk here saying that, you know, if you get a goal, for example, or something, Limerick won't let you get the next, they won't let you get three scores, basically. They'll break it somehow. But they didn't have that control. And three goals in 25 minutes as well. Again, I think, Will, you had the stat about the last team to score three goals against Limerick has been, good few years ago now at this stage. Maybe that's just Championship. Could be league as well, I'm not sure. But
oh, it was league as well, but now they've looked way more leaky in this league campaign. We can get into that in a minute, but it's very unusual, not just the three goals that were conceded in that first half, but the reality is, even if we take TJ's free, which was a bit opportunistic, the reality is that Kilkenny created more one-on-ones where they could have scored more goals.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, one-on-ones was a big thing. That's very uncharacteristic of Limerick. And just being able to, you know, I actually saw Ray Boyne had a really good point just on Twitter. He was just saying that, you know, the fight out the field just wasn't there. And when that isn't there, if you're committing players to run and support in the half-back line, midfield, half-forward line, but the work rate isn't there, well, then you're actually isolating your full back line, because if that ball gets turned over and you haven't got people in then fighting on that turnover or stopping Kilkenny from getting their head up and identifying that there's, you know, an isolation happening inside in the full forward line, Kilkenny were just popping balls in. Because when Paddy Deegan, let's say they turned over the ball from Keane Lynch, John Donnelly picks it up, pops off to Paddy Deegan. You're saying, you know, pop it over the bar. Paddy Deegan looks up, sees TJ is in isolated in on the square one-on-one with a defender. I said, Jesus Christ, that's, I can't remember the last time I really saw something like that. And I think the tackle count, which is another big thing, was, I think it was 50 to 41 to Kilkenny for the first half, something around that. Again, give Ray Boyne credit for that. Like, there was just a good few markers there that from the first half alone. Now, we still expected Limerick to come out of the traps in the second half, as they do. And even with Owen Cody getting sent off, and I know we'll get into that as well, but even with Owen Cody getting sent off, I thought, right, maybe now Limerick will kick on, and they just didn't. Kilkenny kept them at arm's length. And like, that's even without the Peter Casey sending off, because at that stage, the game was nearly over at that stage anyway. So look, there's lots of things here that were uncharacteristic, but like Derek spoke about it after the game, and you know, he's very measured in what he said. He just said, look, we're happy. Yeah, it's great, but we're not, you know, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. A Championship game is going to be a far higher pace. We know that, you know, facing Limerick in the Championship as opposed to facing Limerick in the league is different. So look, it's a really good win. It's definitely a good marker to say, right, well, we overcame Limerick. But look, nobody's getting ahead of themselves either way on this one.
Yeah, I suppose, Gail, this goes one of two ways ultimately in how we analyse this later in the year. And there's a lot of questions people asking, are Limerick going to win every game for the rest of the year and so on and so forth. But depending on what happens, if this is a 5-in-a-row at the end of it, people will say that John Kiely took off Lynch, took off Galan, accepted a defeat in a league semi-final, moved on, got it right for Championship. And maybe it was the exact jolt that they needed to kick on and that bit of extra hunger to make sure they went on for 5-in-a-row. Or if the summer doesn't go as planned, do we look back on this and say that maybe there's been a blueprint laid out by Kilkenny for other teams to get at Limerick?
Yeah, I think when you hear successful managers or players at the end of the year after winning a national title, they'll usually pinpoint a momentum shift or a critical moment in the year where they said, right, we got our shit together from there, or we just took off from X performance. And the same thing can happen too if a year goes bad. Like, I've been involved in teams where there's been a couple of incidents and there's a couple of issues, bad games we've played, and we've tried to pull it back and just use, it's like a bit of a snowball effect. It just gets worse and worse. And, you know, I was looking into my crystal ball last week and I couldn't see a situation whereby Limerick were bet. It's going off the evidence. I was defending them when they conceded three goals against Tipperary, putting them down to, you know, let's say poor decision making, you know, bad structure at the back, something we never associate with Limerick. And then we see that there were three goals again. And to be honest, I know we'll touch on it later, but Nicky Quaid, I thought, was excellent for Limerick in the goals yesterday. He had, I think, 8 or 9 goal shots, had to contend with, and saved at least 5 of them. So the damage could have been far worse. But like, it's you know, we perceive things as we watch the game, and just Limerick weren't there at all. They weren't even there in person, you know. Whatever has gone on in the last couple of weeks, and we know what's gone on, it's been very well publicised, but even the whole energy that they always bring to games, it was absent. You know, I was with you, Murph. I was looking at the first couple of minutes going, Jesus, this is going to be a rout. Super finish from Galan on the goal. And next thing, for the next, next 5 minutes, Kilkenny hit 2-3. You know what I mean? Which was, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that before, like I said, Murph, in any instance, whether it be a bad league game or a Championship game, whereby Limerick not alone let you get a goal, but to get 2 goals and tack on 3 points, mainly from turnovers. So the thing about this, we rarely see Limerick get turnover. They usually win the turnover battle, they usually win the possession battle, and they usually win the score at the end, you know. And they lost all three emphatically yesterday. And they were devoid of energy, and they were completely isolated at the back. I circled one-on-one. There are multiple situations where we never associate a Limerick defence allowing a one-on-one occur. And like, if you've got TJ Rieger in one-on-one, that's danger, major danger. And I just talked to Kinney Hurl really well, heads up Hurl yesterday. We talked about the Paddy Deegan pass. Like, it was so accurate. He put it to TJ's outside, up to a lovely spot where TJ can get it on the turn. It was just, it was really sharp, and it had the signs of a performance that this wasn't by accident. This was head for the goal, head for the black spot, isolate one-to-one, crowd the middle. If they want to make it a battle, let's make it a battle. If they try to run through us, we'll have plenty of bodies there to stop it. And Keane showed up for the fight. Limerick got knocked out in more ways than one, you know. And I think that you have to coincide this with a brilliant Limerick, or Kilkenny performance, excuse me, for everyone, even the subs that came in, did damage, versus Limerick, who just didn't show up after the fifth minute, you know. Yeah. So John Kiely is food for thought. His interview after the game says as much. So I wouldn't like to be in the training session on Tuesday evening.
Well, see, Skell, I don't want to take away from Kilkenny at all, because I agree with you. I think Kilkenny showed much more intensity, much more hunger. They showed an accuracy when it came to when they got those turnovers as well. Because yeah. Sean Flynn, our good mate, despite appearing on rival podcasts over the last couple of weeks, sent me on a video on Saturday night, which was basically the point he was making. I'm sure he's going to tweet it. I can't put it in the YouTube, or we'll get stung for copyright by using the footage. But the point he was making was that in the All-Ireland final last year, you could see that Kilkenny were trying to get those isolations that actually worked in Páirc Uí Chaoimh the weekend just gone by. But whether down to either good Limerick one-on-one defending, or whether down to maybe the execution of the pass not quite being been put in the breadbasket for TJ, it wasn't quite at that level in the All-Ireland final, but it worked this time round, would make it clear that this is a plan that Derek Ling had for some time. Yep. I just wonder when it comes to Limerick, because as you say, all the big games, they've shown up over the last 5 years. That's just what they do.
Yeah.
Was this the worst performance we've seen under John Kiely?
I think worst performance, when you consider the clientele that were available to him. You know, a lot of the big name players were there and playing. And like, you can't tell me that there's a grander plan at stake here, whereby they say, let's coax through it. And if we win, we win. If we don't, we don't. It's all about the championship. Like, Murph, you're the same way. We've been involved in plenty of games, whether it be a club challenge game or an inter-county national semi-final. You want to win everything. It's as simple as that. And they were outfought yesterday, and which is a more surprising one, they were outstructured. Like, if you think of, I think of all the national games that Limerick have played in finals, and they have a superb record. They always have a suffocation about them at the back, where teams find it so hard to get even a point out the field. Never they had low one-to-ones. And it's because like they're from there, let's say 5 to 12, they're so good in zonal defence, so good in attacking, so good at moving the ball, so good at turning you over on a collective press, if you know what I mean, that it's very hard for teams to get through. And if teams then get forced to hit the ball further back towards their own half corner or full back line, it lands into multiple Limerick lads. But yesterday, Kilkenny went straight through them. On multiple occasions, they went straight through them. And I liked what they did. They won the turnovers in the middle, split it out wide, and then in she goes in 1-1. And as it went in 1-1, if you take the own Cody goal, the very first one, there was three forwards inside the whole Limerick half on Kilkenny's behalf. And two of those forwards were sprinting from the 65. So it was evident, it was clear as day what was happening, that they kept a couple of forwards on the, call it the Limerick side of goal. So if they win the turnover, they had multiple options. A, pop it to go for a point, or B, go out wide. That forced Limerick to push up. And that's something we've never seen before, in a sense whereby they've lost the push. They've lost, let's say, the turnover battle there. I'm looking at a statistic here from, you know, the statsman on Twitter, and it was, the turnovers won. Kilkenny won it by 5. You know what I mean? 32-27. And like, it's a strange one, because Limerick scored yesterday. They scored 1-8 from play versus Kilkenny's 3-7. You know what I mean? I don't remember 1-8 ever being scored from play at that level for Limerick. It's always been 3-10, 3-15. You know what I mean? So to answer your question in a long-winded way, I do believe it's the worst performance. When they got beaten by Clare last year, it was a titanic game of the Munster Championship. When they got beaten by yourselves, Murph, they came back and it was pipped by a point. I could be wrong, but it was pipped by a point. They had a couple of league losses 2 or 3 years ago, early days, with a lot of their main stars not there. So yes, I'm going to have to say that in a big game, heading for a national title, this is their worst performance in, I'd say, 7 years.
Yeah. Now, look, I'm willing to write off, by the way, games that are played in the league, in the regular section, where they're going to be mixing up the team. This time round, as experimental as the team that was named on Thursday night was, it still retained, you know, a fair spattering of guys who've won multiple Munsters and All-Irelands, and a lot of their big players were out on the pitch at the weekend. I guess maybe in midfield, you start to realise that when you don't have your two enforcers there, that maybe it's not quite the same, Murph, as what it would usually be.
Yeah, potentially, but we've spoken for several weeks about the embarrassment of riches is the term we're using for how many players and what players. Last week we even spoke about what player are going to lose out, you know, because they just have so many players in so many areas. absolutely, Darragh Donovan was a loss in that area. But I think there's way more to point towards, let's say, the 5 to 12 as a group, as opposed to just the two midfielders there, and that would have solved everything. Like, if you look at even before TJ's goal, Keane Lynch gets turned over and he kind of just runs into a cul-de-sac, which I can't remember the last time Limerick players do that. There's always players off the shoulder. Like, you know, usually you see a Limerick player getting the ball in hand, carrying it past with great pace and power, and then there's someone off the shoulder that goes again and gives the next surge. But I actually looked at Keane Lynch and there was no one really available to him, and that was really just... That to me just smacked of kind of the work rate around the player in possession just wasn't there. Like, you know, as Skettle is saying there, 1-8 from play. Again, that's its own indicator as well that, okay, the work rate isn't there. So there was lots of things that I think, yeah, if you put Darragh Donovan back in, of course, it's going to improve it. But I think what John Kiely even remarked about, and I think what will be the focus going forward, is he'd be saying that's this work rate across the board. Because you couldn't point to any one player to say, well, that was the chink in the armour, or that was the area that they need to improve in. It was a kind of a group dropping of standards, really, is what it was there. But, you know, it will certainly serve to focus the mind for John Kiely. You know, it's better get that now than it would be get it in the first round up in Ennis, because then you're going week on week into games and you've now suddenly... If you needed a reminder, you needed a bit of kick in the arse, you know, you'd rather get it now than get it later when you could then suddenly be treading water trying to make sure you qualify. I'm not saying that's going to be the case for Limerick, but I've been part of years with Kilkenny where, you know, you were going week to week, 2013 in particular, you were going week to week with an injury here, an injury there. There's a little bit of, you know, the feel in the dressing room is a little bit edgy just because you're kind of trying to just get the next result and try and get back to train and improve again, but the confidence wasn't coming, you know. So I think that Limerick have a great opportunity now to go away for a few weeks. Like, they have a bullseye now on Cusick Park and attacking that, but like, we'll talk about Clare in a while. The one thing that I took from the Clare game was just that they look like they're practicing their aggression at the moment. They were so electric starting the game that to me was something I read going like, yeah, okay, Clare are out here playing Tipperary today, but I think Clare are practicing their aggression. They threw everything at that game today. They unloaded the bench. They, you know, they gave everything for it. So I was looking at that going, right, well, it's, if I was Limerick, I'd be happy I got that reminder the weekend, because it looks like Clare are really, I suppose, really ready for what's coming down the tracks.
Can I ask you a question, Les? Do you think we've seen a bit of this from Limerick before, whereby they've been so good and so efficient and so head and shoulders above the rest that their next game, you know, after a long break, is poor? Do you remember last year they blitzed Kilkenny in the league final, then the Waterford Championship game they almost got beaten, and they nearly got, you know, then they got beaten. Do you remember, remember after Clare? So they kind of stuttered through the Munster and then they took flight. Yeah. So what's your thoughts on, yes, they were beaten and beaten comprehensively yesterday? They could turn around now in X amount of weeks' time, and I'm not going to say blitz Clare, but they could show up like ravenous animals. You know what I mean? Because they've now got their warning earlier in the season. So I believe that Limerick are good enough in both on the management side of things and player side of things that they've recognised this was well below par. And I think the next 3 or 4 weeks are going to be, as they say in the old terms, they'll be skin and hair flying in training. So I think from a Clare perspective, it was well off if Limerick came through, won the national title again in the league. Everyone's applauded them, but now where they're coming from, they're like a wounded dog.
I agree largely what you've just said, which is that of the four teams, for me, the team who had the least need to win the league were Limerick because of what they've done over the last few years. Like, it would have been another national title. I'm sure they would have loved to have won it. But from their point of view, they now have a good run at this. They can always have like a mini pre-season before they get ready for these big games in the Munster Championship. And I wonder if their form in Munster might not be better than it was last year as well, where they went reasonably full tilt at the knockout stages of the league last year and, as you said, comprehensively beat Kilkenny at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And then they were a little bit kind of below that level when it came to the Munster Championship itself. Maybe this is all about timing from Limerick's point of view. We don't know, because we're not part of the camp. We don't know what kind of loading they're doing around their trend at the moment either, Murph. Where
I think they're... Sorry to interrupt you, Will, as well. Just a point of note. I think they're going to Portugal tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they've got a warm weather training camp in mind.
So this is actually...
It'd be grand.
It'd be grand. It's actually perfect timing, I think, if you know what I mean, you know, to assess
it.
Yeah.
It is.
Do you ever go to Murph, Jimmy?
No, you've asked me that previously. No, as far as we ever went was Carton House. We never.
That's true. It was Fort Island.
Fort Island.
Cody never brought you abroad.
Not at all. No. I think Brian always viewed it that luxury. He had as much done down in Photo Island or in Carton House as he would in Florence. So
piss and rain.
2 days. Yeah. We used to go a few times. And they were great. I used to love them. Jesus, going to Carton House or Photo Island was enough for me. I was happy out. I'd happily would have taken Portugal, but even going back there, like I was even thinking, like you're saying, there definitely was, like, I think complacency does have to be mentioned as well. Like, I mean, you can kind of say maybe winning or different things, but there was definitely things. I mean, if you look at one of the goal opportunities where Owen Cody got the ball and one-handed threw the ball down, slapped it across the box, and Declan Hannon drops it, and suddenly there's a scramble around goal mouth. Like, that was completely uncharacteristic. And if I think of games where we as a defence were like that, I do think of league games, but I think of games where, like, the heads, not to say the heads weren't right, but, you know, you maybe just weren't ready for the match as you should have been. And maybe training had been going really well in the run into it. Maybe games have been going really well. And that in itself is a dangerous place to be. Like, I remember Brian saying to us in the dressing room one day, we were after winning all our games in the league, maybe 3 or 4 games into it. Training was going really well. It was, I do remember whatever year it was off the back of an All-Ireland winning year. So, you know, the feeling was good. And Brian just held everyone back and said, listen, lads, it's going a bit too good for me liking nearly. Almost, essentially, that's what he's saying. And so lads kind of laughed. He's like, look, lads, you know, like, you know, winning softens you as well, you know. So just, you know, be careful that there's not something coming on the tracks here that completely derails you, where you go out and you take such a hammer. Like, if you look at 2011, Tipperary, you know, absolutely cleaned Waterford out of it in the Munster final. And they went through a fairly, I can't remember who they played in the semi-final. I think it could have been Cork or whoever, but they came through it and were expected to kind of, I suppose, blitz us in the final, but maybe just weren't ready because things had been going so well. They presumed that they would turn up on the day and they would win. Similar, I would say, the following year with us in 2012 against Easkehill. You know, we turned up to an Leinster final, and Tommy always framed it afterwards. We turned up to play, he turned up to win. Or it was a case of, if you're off by 5%, the other team smelt it. The other team was already, you know, savage to go out and attack you. And I just think that Kilkenny at the weekend, it meant a bit more to Kilkenny this match, I will say that. Mm-hmm. And Kilkenny definitely came out of the traps. Well, they didn't come out of the traps straight away, but they responded really well, and there was an aggression about them. They were hitting hard. They were willing to maybe take a yellow card here or there, but they were definitely sending a message to say, well, look, we may as well throw everything at these lads. And it maybe just wasn't something Limerick were ready for on the day. But like you said, and we've said it enough, that look, Limerick will move on from this. They'll take stock of it. I'm sure John Kiely has plans in tow as it is, that will, you know, have these lads ready. And what it may even mean is that, you know, the likes of the Adam English and Donegal Dalig and these lads, who we have been saying, will they or won't they make a championship panel? You know, John Kiely, I'll say, championship starting 15. John Kiely may be saying, look, to the more established players, look, these lads are fighting hard. These lads are performing. Like, Adam English was lively at the weekend, and he was showing, like, and he could maybe say that, well, lads, the more, he could light a fire under a few of the more established lads and say, look, you know, when the backs were to the walls, how did we react? So I think certainly the Limerick train will get up and going this week with whatever training camp they have.
We've a million questions about referees, by the way. So without even having to surmise this, I think all three of us, because we were WhatsApping each other while the match was on Saturday, and you know, some of the decisions really were questionable. I mean, the thing is, Kel, like, letter of the law, the little flick out from Owen Cody will get you a second yellow card. But it's so rare that you would see that being handed as a second yellow but comes a red.
I have to slightly disagree with you about letter of the law. You know, there's certain... A striking action, right? Yeah, fair enough, is a red. Okay, but there's ones that are... It's very hard to explain, because I can pick numerous cases whereby, you know, people will come at me and they'll say, look, by the letter of the law, as you just said, Will, and by the rule book, he deserved to be yellow card. But a lot of sports, right, is not by the book. There has to be an element of common sense, an element of feel of the game, an element to seeing what's in front of you, nearly judging the intent of the player. And like, Owen Cody didn't intend to do any damage. You know, I just think he was a touch late. That's all. Yeah. And I think a second yellow card is over-punishment, really over-punishment. And at the time it happened, I just said to myself, well, fuck you, you're after you ruined the game, James Owens. You know what I mean? Because this was such a good game up to that point that I said, this could open the door for Limerick to come through. Now, they didn't come through the door. Limerick, or Kilkenny closed it again. But there was a whole host of instances whereby I was looking at calls made by James Owens, and I just couldn't get myself into his mind space, if you know what I'm saying. I'm always trying to put myself into his mind space to see what's he thinking, what rule has been broken here in today's senior game. And like, there was, I'm not just one, Will, or five, there was 10 or 15 incidents yesterday whereby there was frees given is one thing, but then there was cards given. And the cards given were so, you know, innocuous, like so below the level of display issuing a card, that I was actually in a state of confusion watching the game. I said, I'm not sure what I'm watching, you know. And like, I was actually questioning how he interprets a tackle. Because if you look at all of the referees, whether it be people who are at the pinnacle of it, like John Keenan, you know, the arm tackle is commonplace, they say. But like, James Owen kept pulling it. Like, he kept pulling the arm tackle, he kept pulling body tackles, he kept doing this. You know what I mean? I was like, what is that about? You know, because we've seen that for the last 5 years. I think the only one he got right yesterday was the Peter Casey one, and that's because he got assistance from his umpires. You know, I just think he, and I hate bemoaning referees, and I'd love to move on from everything bar the referee. I'd love to say about the game, talk about goals, etc. But ultimately, that some of the decisions that were made by James were so unbelievably bad that we're forced to talk about it. And like, I'm straight up here, I am questioning his involvement in the championship going forward, because of all the referees nationally over the last number of years, big incidents happen. A lot of the time it's him. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the time it's him. And like, I'm not trying to badger the man. I know they're doing a job, and you can, all the people can throw that he's an amateur, etc. I understand that. But when you're actually, you know, becoming the central focus of the game, and you're actually moving the game in a direction that it shouldn't go yourself, I think it's time to have a look in the mirror and say, look, this maybe isn't for me. And I know there's a charge to referees, because I understand that, I get that. But there has to be others out there who are maybe younger, who maybe are on the circuit a bit only for a couple of years, but they have to be able to do better than that, because ultimately, every day I see him, the minute he becomes the referee of a game, I'm saying this is going to be an issue, and he's going to take over the game. And like it was yesterday, he did. So maybe, Murph, what do you think? Am I over-exaggerating? Like, sometimes I do, but that's the way I feel, and I think it's truthful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I suppose as a Kilkenny man, I maybe seem to be biased, but I know, look, in fairness, I was looking at the game. Like, last week we had, was it Thomas Welsh with the Limerick-Galway game? And like, in fairness, even though I know there was a little bit of, I suppose, online people were maybe a bit upset about a few of the challenges.
By the way, you took quite a bit of criticism last week, where it was like, you said that there was two or three decisions wrong and Selwyn. I think he did a decent game.
So yeah.
You took a bit of criticism as well. Go on.
Yeah, he did take criticism, yeah. And like, we even said that, we acknowledged that last week, but we kind of, I thought that, given everything that was at his disposal, I thought he had a good game last week, because I was saying, well, if I was in that position, a few of the tackles that went in, you know, let's say Davy Burke's one where it was a red, yeah, it was a red, but, you know, it happened so quickly, and where he was with the conditions he was in, I was saying, Jesus, could he have seen that? I'm not sure. And I understand that people would be, you know, when you're sitting at home and you're watching it on telly and you have a plain sight of it, fine. This week, you know, between James Owens and Liam Gordon, I had a look at it, and I thought Liam Gordon had a really good game. You know, I was looking at comparing tackles, and, you know, there was an inconsistency across both games in terms of what was a yellow and what wasn't, what was a free and what wasn't. And I thought Liam Gordon was very consistent about what he was doing, and I just felt a big inconsistency about what James Owens was doing, where, you know, I looked at Garrod Hegarty's, he was coming out against Richie Reid, and I just felt it was good, strong play where he just used Richie Reid's momentum, pushed him aside and kept going. And I was, as a Kilkenny man watching the game, I was going, this is actually harsh on Garrod Hegarty. Straight away, I mean, when I saw, you know, Owen Cody being sent off, I mean, Declan Hannan didn't react. You know, it was a hurl trying to flick the ball, hit him on the knee. Declan Hannan goes, yeah, right, Grant, that's sore, but he's not looking for anything, obviously. And sends him off. I mean, it's not a sending off. Like, you know, you don't, it's not the case you apply the rule differently when a fella's on a yellow card, but, you know, you do have a common sense, you take a fella. Like, I was sent off by Colm Lyons before. It's my only red card, but I was sent off by Colm Lyons. But he warned me before it. Like, you know, he gave me a yellow, he warned me before it, and he kind of said, you know, you want to be careful, like, and sure, then sent me off. But like, you know, there's an understanding there. Now, I understand if a player's on the yellow and he goes in with a very high tackle or a hard tackle and you send him off, well, that's fine, because, I mean, it's warranted. But I even look at, let's say, Jake Morris being sent off against Tip, and, you know, Jake Morris had fouled a few times, and, you know, Liam Gordon had spoke to him and things as well. So it was just, I felt the inconsistency across the two games, but I felt the inconsistency lay more with James Owens in terms of what he was calling. Like, realistically, by what I saw yesterday, he should have sent off Jordan Mulally at the end of the game as well, by what he was calling, because Jordan Mulally was on a yellow and he did a bit of a high tackle on, I can't remember which Limerick player it was, but he did a bit of a high tackle. And I actually said to myself, right, there's Jordan Mulally is going to be sent off here now. And he wasn't. So I was completely confused. I actually felt the frustration of the Limerick crowd, to be honest, because I think they maybe bore the brunt of it a little bit more than Kilkenny at times. I think after after Owen Cody was sent off, where we felt we were hard done by, I think maybe Kilkenny got a few calls then that maybe probably balanced it out that frustrated Limerick people then and frustrated Limerick players. So there was an inconsistency. And that's something that I would have felt frustrated with before.
What's this crack of, like, I hear this argument, right? It balances it out. Is that him trying to balance it out? Do you think after he sent off Cody, he's going through the game again and goes, shit, that was probably, like, I probably got that wrong. Time to even up a bit.
I don't know because, I mean, he didn't have much qualms about sending off Cody. And, like, in the moment, if you are in doubt, you know, as Cody's coming over to you, you often see referees taking out the book, and that's a taking out kind of deciding, right, am I going to take here or am I going to give a yellow? What am I going to do? And they have time, you know? So I don't think you make a rash decision in the moment like that for own Cody and then go, right, actually, I may just deliberately now, I suppose, give a few frees back. But it nevertheless, there was a thread of inconsistency along the way that was just, I couldn't figure out what the next free was going to be called for. And that was the problem. And I think as a player, that is frustrating because you really just don't know. You're walking around on eggshells because you're going, what is going to be blown here? And I'm killing my own team's momentum, but I don't really understand what I'm doing wrong, because never mind the last match, it's the last play even. That's as far as it's going back where, well, that was a free in the last play, but it's not a free now, or that was a yellow card. Jesus, I did a higher tackle in the last one and I didn't get anything. So, like, it was so inconsistent that I think it actually took from the game, to be honest. It was teed up to be a really good game. You could see both teams were going at it. And I think it just actually, it became the elephant in the room that we don't know what's about to happen next.
But where I came through the two games this weekend was, I'm not sure what the definition of a tackle is anymore, Les, because I don't know how we actually police it, because you see the spare arm now on the tackle and they're trying to pull back the hurley arm. That's, again, by the letter of the law, by the book, that's a foul. So a lot of these tackles where you get bottled up or where the spare arms of the tackle, I don't know how referees are supposed to call that. The only way I do see the call it is that if they grab a jersey, go up around the neck. But, like, for Gordon today, I thought he policed the spare arm really well. But for James Owen, I thought he policed it really bad. And that sounds bad as I'm sitting here going, I can't know what's what, but there's ones that are quite innocuous and really not freeze, and he was giving them, whereas Liam Gordon was saying, right, if you break through the tackle, I'll let you off. And that's what happened. You know what I mean? Whereas I just know, I'm not going to say that James Owens should be removed from the circuit. I'm not saying that, but I just wonder, like, is his time up? Because, do you know what I mean? John Keenan was his time was unfortunately brought up because of his age. But, like, are we in charge now? Where, like, you know, the GAA have to look at this and say, right, James, it's time to move you off national level. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know what the guidelines are on it. Like, you know, but, like, even to flip it over to the other side, you know, one thing I did notice about Liam Gordon, like, and it just because of the match yesterday, I was kind of watching Liam Gordon to see what he does. And what I thought he actually did really well was that, you know, he'd blow free or he let it on or whatever he was doing, but he seemed to be communicating with the players quite well. And that's
a brilliant speaker.
Yeah, he's very good.
Have you ever had a game with him?
I obviously must have, but I mustn't have fouled a whole lot during the game because I don't remember talking.
He's extremely calm and level, right? And he talks to you what you did wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, you could be at him, like, and you could raise your voice to a certain decibel level, I admit, right? He remains the same level and he speaks back to you, like, and tells you what you're at. So you get live information during the game, which is excellent.
And it's good for the head as well, because, like, you know, players are constantly, when you have that much adrenaline and you're getting hit and wherever, there's a possibility that a bit of anger could creep into it there. But when lads are explaining it to you, like, you know, I saw Willie Connors at one stage chatting to him and he was kind of having a laugh because there was some sort of a free anyway. Someone else got fouled and the person that got fouled got up and he was saying something to him anyway. And your man was like, yeah, that's grand, no bother. And it just seemed like a good kind of a relationship they were having there. Like, I know it's a separate kind of a story, but a few years ago we played Clare and Ennis and what's the name of the referee from Carlow there? Oh God,
Paul O'Dwyer, is it?
Yeah, Paul O'Dwyer, yeah. We were fleeting back defended. Now, granted, there was three of us in the full back line with green helmets. It was myself, Shane Prendergast and Joey Holden. But I was coming from the left half back position running back and the play was over on the far side and it came through on goal and everybody came through. But Joey had basically sledged whoever it was going through. He was baiting him like an ass as he was going through. By the time the ball went over the bar or something, he gave the free. But then he called me back. He was like, he was going to book me. And I said, Jesus, Pod, that wasn't, what are you booking me for? He goes, you were hitting Shane O'Donnell there, whoever. I was like, that wasn't me. And but he actually listened to me. I was like, Pod, he was just going, look, I'm having none of it. I'm booking you. I said, Pod, will you at least please talk to your umpire or your linesman? I came from the other side of the pitch. And he did. And he went over and he spoke to the linesman. Linesman said, no, that was Joey Holden. And he went, grand. And he went, Simon, that's fine. But even that, like, you know, as in, I mean, I know that's maybe a very, you know, narrow case that I'm given there, but it was just that communication. You know, at least you knew there was an understanding there that you can get something wrong here, but as long as we communicate it, that's okay. And, you know, on we go. We had a laugh about it and move on. But I felt a bit of frustration from even seeing players now on Saturday. I felt, you know, there was just so...
He doesn't communicate. No. It's very well known, I say, like, we know, let's say very well, that he doesn't communicate at all. It's just pure silence, which is very, very frustrating. And a bit disrespectful, if you ask me.
And my take-home message here is that Murph is a snitch and got Joey Holden booked.
Just about Joey wasn't on the yellow.
Well, I was already on the yellow. So.
Before you. See, that's an important detail.
That's clever.
Fairly sure in the same game, I didn't retreat quickly enough for a Podge Collins free, and he rose it up and he slapped it off me. But I got booked. So it was going right. I'm on the yellow here now, so I kind of had to rat Joey out for that one, unfortunately. Yeah.
Fair enough. There's loads of questions we want to get to, but this one has a bit of levity away from a very serious topic there. And it comes in from Kieran O'Donovan. Get a vet on to talk about the pigeon. The Porky Queen pigeon on Saturday, or do the lads have any animal on the pitch related stories themselves? So I asked the lads just before we started, and we unearthed two photos which we can talk about here. First of all, Division 1A, February 2012, James Skell with a dog. It's Galway against Dublin. He looks positively annoyed having to carry this dog off the pitch. Skell, give us the story. What's going on with this dog on screen at the moment?
I don't think I'd use the word annoyed, Will. Bear in mind now, I come from a farm background, so I'm not used to it. I'm okay with dirt and animals, right? But this dog was so dirty, right? And I mean, he was a league game in 2012. He's on the pitch. He's beside the goal. And in fairness, he was wagging the tail, so he was friendly enough. But as I'm going down to him, and I can see him and go, geez, you. Like, I honestly thought he'd rabies. He was that bad. In my mind, I pick him up and go, I have no opportunity to wash my hands now. So why didn't I just shoo him off? But here I am picking him up going, oh, Jesus. But I left him down nice and soft. I don't know where he came from, that dog.
How long was he on the pitch before you took him off?
Dublin were on the attack and he was there beside me. Like he was wagging the tail looking to get rubbed. You know, the other way dogs go on their back. The belly facing up, and he's like, rubber belly. And I'm like, get off, you fuck, get off. out dog, you know what I mean? And then Dublin put the ball, I think they put it wide. And so I went to go pick him up. And then as I'm going towards him, he sees my hands coming. He then starts to move. And I just said, don't do it to me. And then you can hear the crowd kind of half giggling. I'm like, oh shit, here I'm going to be chasing dog now for the next 30 seconds. But then I said, and then he lay down again. I picked him up and then I put him out over the wall at the end. I don't know where he came from, probably around the terrace houses, but.
Do lads bring Jack Russells like to games? I mean, I know it was a thing that used to be years ago where I actually was at an Aussie Rules match, not the international rules. I was there that year. Do you know the dog came onto the pitch?
Yeah, amazing. Actually
got a few touches on the ball, which was remarkable.
Yeah.
But I remember going that day. I was like, did that dog wander in off the street? Which I hope is probably the only explanation. Or did someone bring like a Jack Russell to the game? Like, I mean,
couldn't bring a dog.
Well, into Croke Park especially, like the idea of say some of the smaller grounds around the country where potentially you know Mick on the gate and you walk in with your dog potentially, but I can't imagine you walk your dog into Croke Park.
Can you imagine
a situation if you did, you brought your dog to Croke Park, you're at the international rules, you're sitting there and you're kind of watching the game and you have a look down to see where your man has gone.
Fentang! Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. In his chase, chasing Darrow and Shear out of the field or some lad from Geelong or something.
Morph, you've seen that video.
What video? Oh, Fentang.
The Fentang video. Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ, Fentang, you're after the deer. Imagine seeing your dog abroad the beach. That's not my dog.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I'm pretty sure Murph's animal story is from Croke Park, isn't it? This is the Peregrine Falcon.
Yeah, that was that is the most suspect photo I've seen. Like, if you try to explain that to someone, it was 2014. I'm fairly sure it was the game we played against Limerick in the torrential rain.
And
obviously Croke Park. Like, this is something the players don't kind of realize is that, or you don't know before you go out. You're focused on the game. But like Croke Park or the GAA could have some sort of a show on at halftime, like the Mary Wallopers could be playing, or there could be a lad out in stilts, or you don't know what's about to run out in the pitch. They're a good band, yeah. Like, I ran out the time we played Limerick in 2019, I ran out on the pitch. I went in to go to the toilet before we went for the parade, and I came running out. There's a lad standing in the tunnel coming out, and he was standing right in the middle of it, and I was going, what the fuck is this lad standing in the tunnel for? And like, and I was kind of half given out, and I was running out the tunnel. It was Shane Lowry. He was after winning the British Open, and they brought him out to, like, you know, to meet the crowd. But I was given out because I was like, who, we didn't know. Like, you just don't know these things are happening. But the one with the Falcon was 2014. We were warming up, and it was a bad enough day. We're pucking around, and this Falcon, the person that was holding the Falcon, the Falconer, I presume.
Falconer, probably, yeah.
Yeah. He was obviously flying this fella around Croke Park. It was part of, like, I think Emirates had taken over a sponsorship or something. And we were pucking around, and suddenly this something whipped by us. And we were like, Kieran Joyce turned to me and said, what the fuck was that? I went, what? He goes, did you see an enormous bird? I was like, it's Croke Park. It's probably a seagull or something. You know, this was brown or black or something, like. And this went on. So Croke Park had announced this to people that this bird was going to bring in the ball for throwing and so on. The bird also presented the man of the match award to Seamus Hickey. But not to be bad on Seamus Hickey, Seamus Hickey gave a very emotional, interview after the game about how disappointed it was to lose by 2 points. And it was brilliant. It really showed the emotion. And then they said, and now Seamus Hickey will present you with your man in the match award. And a fella who looks like he's from Thurles comes in, hogged out in the gear. Like, not to be bad, but that man may be from the United Arab Emirates, but he'll be from Ballinasloe, and presents Seamus Hickey with the man in the match award. And I remember watching back the match going, what? There's the fucking bird again. What was going on? What is this bird? So that apparently was a crack, but that's the problem.
It could be his uniform, or that could be the Falconer's uniform.
Could be down in Tullamore right now as we speak, sitting at the bar and having, I don't know, but I just thought the whole thing was very suspect.
It was the Etihad sponsorship, I think, around about that time as well. Okay, this can go to you, Murph, because you're a specialist on this. Coming in from Jerry Walsh, 83. Why can't defenders defend one-on-one anymore? Gone like football. Defenders are leaving players get the ball and then tackling. Obviously, one-on-one came into effect quite a bit in the Limerick-Kilkenny game particularly.
Yeah, now I will preempt this by saying I saw that comment before we came on. Jerry Welch, I told a story about Jerry Welch in one of our live pods in the one down in Limerick. Jerry Welch is a man who is a fan of one-on-one defending. He's actually from Carrickinshore. Great hurler. I think Owen Kelly actually named him as being the stickiest defender he'd ever marked. So he's a man who's well, I suppose, versed in the dark arts of defending. But Jerry, I once saw Jerry near almost choke poor Seamus Callanan out of it in a Defence Forces versus Bank of Ireland match one time. So I told that story when Podge Collins was on the stage anyway. But the one-on-one defending, yeah, there certainly was a few instances where the one-on-one defending over the weekend. the one thing I would kind of say with that is I've seen lots of instances where defenders are isolated one-on-one, and it's very much last chance saloon. It's very much like that. You know that if you, I suppose, drag a player down at this stage, you're probably going to, you know, be in a lot of trouble.
Black card and pen, potentially.
Yeah. It's hard to get close to him as it is. But also what a lot of people don't see is, if Jerry is referring to the individual situations there, like let's say where, let's say for TJ's goal the weekend, for Jake Morris, was it Jake Morris's goal? So he was isolated as well. What oftentimes you don't see going on there is that once the player gets isolated inside, the fullback gets isolated with the full forward, usually the full forward starts running fairly hard there to try and pull and drag the cornerback all over the place and basically get to a stage where you're shaking him. And when that ball is being delivered in, you're kind of actually getting caught on the back foot. And if you're watching it on telly, you maybe don't see it, but good forwards will do it where they'll, you know, they know they've space inside, so they start running. They don't stay static because the defender wants you to stay static. And by the time that ball arrives in, the defender is, you know, nearly on his last legs at times and has been running fairly hard for about 20 seconds before that. But I'd still agree with him. Like, there certainly has been instances where one-on-one defending, like the old thing of just getting up close to your man, getting hurling, flicking it, spoiling it. Lads have been kind of standing off their men, I think, a small bit. And we have seen a few examples of it there, of just the basics, getting in beside them, spoiling them. As a defender, all you have to do is spoil them. You don't have to do a whole lot else. You don't have to win the ball. Spoil them and wait for the cavalry to arrive, you know, get the ball down the ground, stand in beside them. So, yeah, Jerry has a point there. You know, we have seen instances where, I suppose, the old art of defending maybe wasn't on display. But I would say in the defender side, certainly at the moment, we spoke about Limerick having defenders isolated. Being isolated in the full back line is a really tough place to be. We saw it with Tipperary, or not with Tipperary, with Clare having lads isolated, with Adam Hogan being isolated. Like, it's a disaster, because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't in many ways. Like, if you go out in front of the forward preparing for that ball to come in, that forward will disappear behind you. We've seen Aaron Galland do it several times where once he knows you're not looking at him anymore, you're goosed. But then if you stand behind the forward, well, you're giving him the advantage then, because he can now dictate where he wants that ball. The player out the field can see it, the player landed in front of him. So in the modern game, it's a very tough thing. Like, certainly when I was cornerback,
it's impossible, Bert.
It's impossible, yeah.
Do you like, think the modern fullback is gone now? Sorry, the fullback of old.
It is. Like, I mean, I would say like the 2016 final, like where was it, 116 was scored off us in the fullback line. Like, that was one of the first times I really saw that open space of in front of you, where your half back line, I suppose, unknowingly got dragged out, and now you're suddenly isolated. And that's the forward's dream. Like, you know, to be isolated with the back is the dream. And consistently isolated is a very tough place to be. So, like, that's something now that we mentioned it with Limerick, it's uncharacteristic. And the reason it's uncharacteristic is because it's a really dangerous thing to be doing when you're isolating, or you're leaving your full back line isolated. And the thing is about it is, most of the time when a full back line has to attack the ball, they have to attack it at 100%, as in terms of sprinting at that ball. Yeah. Whereas you see halfbacks, midfield, half forwards, they can tend to run hard and ghost onto a ball, but that's different to, you know, flat out sprinting, going back into your position, flat out sprinting. So if you consistently expose a full back line to that, the cracks will appear in the armour and you're going to be in bother. So
even today's game, Murph, like, you've got a 2-man from forward line a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So like, you've got space in front of you and a lot of space. And most teams nowadays are synchronised. So the forward knows where the ball is going, but you don't really have a good idea.
Yeah.
And even if you do have an idea, the forward always has that, he knows, like, I know where I want the ball. So he's a step or two in front of you. And that little bit of time is all you need. And they're so effective nowadays. How do you, like, so if you play in front of a guy now, like, he'd lose you at the far side. You look like an ass.
I got onto, when I actually started playing cornerback, it was only 2008 when I was under 21 with Kilkenny, started playing cornerback. Mickey Welsh put me in there. And I was like, this is simple. Like, I mean, you just run. When the halfback gets the ball, run forward. Because at that time, halfbacks weren't looking up, or, you know, midfielders weren't, they were just striking ball. And if you knew, like, if I was looking down the line and I knew your man is after winning a great ball, but he doesn't have to look because he's not required to look and he's just striking it in, run out in front and you were winning balls, you know. So, like, this was consistently it. But the game changed once, really, it was a requirement from the halfback line and midfield to get your head up and look at the forward where you're putting it. And, like, I would have really started experiencing that then against, like I said, Tipperary 2016. But even then, Limerick really brought that in, of where we would have seen, like, Graham Mulcahy, maybe Seamus Flanagan, Aaron Galan, when we started playing them around 2017, 2018, where they actually had a plan, where they knew what they were doing. They would go, like, linear. And suddenly we're now, oh shit, we're not a flat back defence. We're actually now stacked on the D, and these lads are breaking left and right into space. And that, there's your problem now. Like, I would have started my career starting on the 21, let's say on the 14, running in a straight line towards, you know, your right half back position towards midfield. Now it's changed that you're probably starting towards where the full back is, and you're breaking left and right. It's actually gone completely the other direction. So the landscape has changed. And, like, if you watch games on telly the whole time, you'll never see this. But if you go to games, obviously, as most people do, you'll go to games. If you actually watch the full back lines now and just have a look at old games 20 years ago, completely different. So the requirement and the position is essentially gone at this stage. You have a full back that holds that position, but the cornerbacks are everywhere and anywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I want to get into Clare and Tipperary a bit here. I can kind of group a few comments in here. People have asked, like, does this make for example, Kevin Ford, does Kilkenny versus Clare now make for a better league final, given these two won't touch each other until the All-Ireland knockout stage? I think very simply, yes, would have to be the answer to that. If this had been Clare and Limerick, we would have been preparing for two teams who would have been completely shadowboxing, while now there's an opportunity for Clare to go at it, to get that little bit of extra confidence, maybe even of winning a national title, which they haven't done so since 2016, to set them up nicely for Munster. For Kilkenny, they're able to work their way through the Leinster Championship a little bit more. Why not go and try and win this and get a win against Clare to kind of get the season rocking? So therefore, we've got two teams who've got every reason to go for it. And quite a few of the Clare fans that tweeted us over the last couple of hours were saying exactly the same. There's no reason for Clare now to hold back because of the pairings coming into this league final. David Byrne makes an interesting point as well. He wonders, did Clare approach today's game in the same manner if Limerick had won yesterday, given that they're both set to meet in 2 weeks' time, I do wonder, like, I mean, Clare obviously flew out of the traps. There was probably every incentive when it was Kilkenny as an opponent as opposed to Limerick as an opponent. And that was some start, Skell, during the game as well. 8 unanswered points inside the first 11 minutes. I mean, the game will ultimately come down to, we talk about the freeze going wrong for Tipperary during it, but there was a start from Clare and there was a finish from Clare today. Both were very impressive. I thought they were the better team over the 70 minutes generally, but they came flying out today.
They absolutely came flying out, and they couldn't miss a beat. Everything they did was nearly to perfection, Will. I thought their defensive structure was really good. They basically closed down space for the Tip forwards. Every ball that was delivered into Tip forward line, the backs were there on arrival, so there was no space at all. It's amazing because they got 8 points in about 10 minutes, and I wrote down here, during the first 10 minutes, I check what teams have scored and see can we project what they score at the end. My projection was 56 points they're on course for. That's how electric they were. You know what I mean? It was that kind of level. It was so crazy. And McDarrah was very, very, I think it was the 7th point. I think David really scored it. And he kept on saying, fake on Spass. Like, look at the space. Mm-hmm. Because Tipperary were playing at times with only two sweepers and trying to protect the inside line too much. They were very well structured on their own puck out, but then in open play, because they had a couple of defenders back, that Clare just absolutely, you know, annihilated them out on the middle. And they got shots off after shots off. Like, Clare had just, I could be correct here, but they had 9, if not 10 scorers in the first half alone. I think all their forwards scored, you know, and their midfield, and potentially one of the backs scored in the first half alone, which is a crazy statistic. Like, it's very rare you hear of, you know, 6 scorers, 7, not mine, 10. You know, so they came out really well. And, you know, to Tip's credit, they battled back. Like, you know, after the first 2 minutes, they won the second half 1-7 to 1-6. You know, so they got back within range. You know, and but I do think they were lucky enough to be 7 down at halftime. I think the loss of Mark Rogers contributed to that because Clare missed a couple of frees. Not to mind all the frees that Tipperary missed. I think I counted 10 frees, lads, that they missed with 4 different takers.
Yeah, it was not. I think it was officially, you know what I mean, logged at 9 missed 9 frees. Yeah. The free takers, it went in this order. It was Jason Ford, then went to Garrod O'Connor, then Willie Connors hit a few, then Sean Ryan was hitting them towards the end of the game. So 19 wides. Yeah. I think, 19 wides in all, and 9 misses. That's not good enough.
No,
the game
that
ultimately is decided by roughly that margin by the end of it.
I think, but look, if I'm going away, right, it's easy points to freeze, you know, and luckily, hopefully you can get that with individual practice. You know, that's an individual skill as opposed to a collective skill for me. And if it's easier for me to nail down an individual skill that is collective. So the freeze, I think they have free takers. I think the conditions played into it, especially the breeze. But the collective skill here was the defence. And like 10 scores signifies a very, very loose defence. So that's why it really concerned for me. And like I was, you know, looking at, you know, like, Ronan Maher, I thought was, his body language was telling me, like in the first 15 minutes, he was pulling his hair out because there was just runners from all sides and there was no real defensive structure. And in those instances, like, I think that Tipperary should just say, right, let's stop the rot. After the 4th point, just drop everybody back into a deep section and try stem this. But they let it go to 5, 6, 7, 8. And the winning margin ultimately was about around the 8 points. So, like, I know in my time, Murph, in your time, you can feel the run coming against you. You can nearly feel it. This is too much. It's too soon. You know what I mean? So let's just pull everybody back for a couple of minutes. Let's get some tackles going and then go forward. You know, nearly like pressing the reset button. But they didn't do that. So I think when Cahill goes away today, I think he'd be happy with the influence that his substitutes have. But I think he'd be very disappointed with you know, his defensive structure and from senior players, Michael Breen and Clues as well, how they allow this 8 points to happen, you know. But look, they showed signs. They showed signs of a real good performance. Take away the first 8 points, which is a big takeaway. It was a draw game, essentially, do you know what I mean? And they had some fantastic finishes and good, as I said, influences from their subs. I've noted here, like, even the goal, let's say, from your man, was it Hayes, Sean Hayes, is it?
Sean Hayes,
super finish, like, Jake Morris, really good movement. You know, he got sent off, but nothing for anything terrible, you know. So, but Clare, I think I circled David Fitzgerald, and I think he's at a level now. If you remember Gareth Hegarty, not last year, the year previous.
I was going to say, you can take this question. So we had 2 questions that come in. It's like, is David Fitzgerald on form right now the best player in the country?
Well, I don't see anybody else who's challenging him at the minute because he's Mr. Consistent. It's a bit like we were talking about David Clifford off air, and David Clifford is awesome because he plays well every day, you know.
Yeah.
And David Fitzgerald is doing the same thing. He's playing well every day. Even go back to last year's semi-final against Kilkenny where Clare weren't hectic. David Fitzgerald was really good. You know what I mean? And every league game he plays every game, mind you. Every league game he plays, you know, every championship game he plays, he's always coming away with I had 8 tackles here off him, like 8 tackles off your wing forward. You know, 1-3, I think he got. You know what I mean? 21 possessions. Like, what? Like, that's awesome stuff. So he's at the level, if you remember, Gareth Hegarty was like head and shoulders above everybody. Remember 2-3 years ago. And he's having that influence now on the Clare team. Not just on the opposition. He's actively, like, you know, surging them forward, if you like. His goal is as good goal as you've seen, because his stride, he's coming so powerful. You don't think he's moving at the pace he was. And what a finish, and what timing, and what smarts too, the way he took it down. So for me, he's the best player on the Clare team at present. And he's probably, no, he is. He's not probably. He is the best player on form in the country at the minute. You know, currently on form. Now that can change as we go into championship. But like, he's producing the goods and producing them every day.
Murph, where are you standing on Fitzgerald's form right now?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was looking at him going like, Jesus, like facing him barreling through, because the power of him, the speed of him coming through, like the only option is to actually foul him, because you can't, I don't think there's a player that could go and hit him fairly when he's at full tilt that wouldn't be anything other than a foul if you're actually to stop him, really. Because
is he 100 kilos, Murph? He's definitely 100 kilos, isn't he?
Jeez, I never weighed him, to be honest. I'll weigh him next week there and find out, but he must be. Yeah, he must be around it, like, you know.
He's smart to me now, right?
What do you ask me that for? Never even met the man. He's 100 kilos.
I reckon he's 100 kilos. I saw him last year after the Dublin game in the Gaelic grounds in the quarter final. He took the shirt off and I said, yeah, that's 100 kg, man.
Yeah.
So if someone can tell us what weight he is, that'll help.
He's definitely the player of the league at the moment. And de facto then he's the best player at the moment in the country. But again, that's like very much on form at the moment. Like if you have one of, I suppose, the lads, let's say, if one hurler of the year in the last few years, or Tony Kelly or whoever, like these lads, if they turn it on for a few weeks, I think they take the mantle. But he's so consistent, which is a huge compliment in itself, because oftentimes it's not a quality we talk about enough with players. But like Dermot Ryan, in fairness, I think you could probably speak about him in the same context, that he's very consistent, you know, always shows up, gets on a lot of ball, has great influence on the game. And when you could probably point to nearly, you know, 99% of other players in the league this year have warranted being taken off at different stages. That's fine. That's normal. That's just part of being a player. But, you know, you couldn't say that about David Fitzgerald. He's just been immense. But, like, again, I know I'm going back to it, but it's just his power is just something else. I mean, like, even seeing him there towards the end when he's getting a few points, like, he doesn't strike that ball. He just absolutely baits the ball out of the park, like, you know. And the goal, at full tilt, running at an angle, the power he got behind it. Like, there's lots of players that wouldn't generate that power of, a, let's say, a standing run-up to a ball. They wouldn't generate it. Him at full tilt.
Do you think he's one of the highest scoring efficiency in the country? I very rarely misses.
Well, he must be, because he's very... he makes a lot of good decisions, you know, as in if he's running through the ball, he looks off the shoulder to see is there anything there, but he knows, he has a good feel for his spatial awareness to see, is there anyone off my shoulder here now, or can I take a shot? And he generally only shoots when he's moving towards goal as well, which is another trait of him. Like, he's not one of these boys over the shoulder. He took one standing today, I think it was his third point, he was at midfield, striking into the wind, and he struck it out over the net from the midfield line. Like, I mean, again, just power. So I would say, what definitely you're right there, Skettle. I don't have the stats on it, but I would say what feeds into his high scoring rate is that just the decisions he makes. Like I said, striking when running towards goal. Running towards goal is really good because he's so big, he's so powerful. You know, it's just a lot of simple things on paper make sense.
He always seems to be coming on the end of a pass. Yeah. Sorry, coming to a pass, facing the goal. So it's rare you kind of see him, you know, coming out with back to goal, having to get a turn, a ledge, and go. He's always seems to be going forward.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As you said yourself, when he's coming at pace, it's like stopping the horse when the gate's half open. Like, just let him off, and sorry, round him up again. You know what I mean? It's just I think a technical skill he got, and you made note of it there. When you're running with the ball, it's easier to score.
Yeah,
you know, shoot in an accurate way. When you're kind of standing, you know, or on a swivel, it's harder. So I just think, but like, his technical ability for a man his size, and he's able to move and shift that weight at that pace, you know, they coincide together, really complement each other. And he's like, he's a complete hurler, to be fair.
Yeah, he's been absolutely class so far. I think if we were picking our hurler of the year so far, David Fitzgerald is who we'd have on, former hurler in the country right now, and he can look forward to that league final coming up on the weekend of the 6th and 7th of April when it's going to be Kilkenny against Clare. We will have the OTB members pod coming for you on Monday, where we're going to take more of a look at the games from the weekend. We'll give a bit more detail on where Tipperary are at this stage now. They're going to have over a month to get ready for their first round in the Munster Championship, so plenty of time for Liam Cahill to try and turn things around. We'll be taking some more of your questions from last week's podcast and ahead of this week as well on the OTB members pod, which will be available on Monday. But that's our lot for the free pod this week. We'll be back next week taking a look ahead to Kilkenny against Clare in a bit more detail on our Bank Holiday podcast. Speak to you then.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.